pretty scary. It was probably, it felt like 150 mile hour winds. I mean, it was whipping pretty good.
It started at 2 a.m. and we were in our house until it got to about mid-thigh.
We're 90% underwater. Every home out there is destroyed.
I called 911, asked them could somebody come and help me. I was too afraid, and the dispatcher told me she didn't know when the lights would come back on.
The water did rise and came in, and it wouldn't stop.
There are so many debris piles still, moldy furniture and couch cushions, rolls of carpet that have been ripped out of someone's house and put on the curb, even clothes and shoes just kind of piled up in these little hills everywhere you look in some of these neighborhoods.
Families and business owners in Houston have to get their lives back on track.
Us handicapped people, they had a retirement home not too far from here. They could let us go there instead of sleeping on these hard cots, and I was so heavy, hurting so bad I had to sit up in a chair many nights and sleep and all that. And I had to have people take me to the bathroom and a big wheelchair.
When you're on the financial edge, when you don't have a lot of backup plans in place and something happens like this, it infiltrates every aspect of your life.
Voices from the aftermath of Hurricane Harvey. The Category 4 storm made landfall a year ago this week when it slammed into the Gulf Coast of Texas. 66 people died, and Harvey caused $125 billion in damage, making it the second costliest natural disaster in U.S. history. This is The Takeaway. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Tanzina Vega this week, and today we begin in some of the communities hardest hit by Harvey. Jill Ament is a reporter and producer for the Texas Standard. She's been reporting from both Port Aransas, which was the site where Harvey first made landfall, and from the rural Beaumont region, which flooded so intensely that the city's water pumping stations were shut down. She talked to residents and city officials about how people are coping a year after the storm. Jill, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So let's begin with Harvey itself. For people who didn't live through the storm, remind us, what was the intensity of the hurricane at the time that it hit Texas, and how did it move across the state?
Yeah, so to give you a visual, if you're not familiar with the layout of Texas, Harvey made landfall in the state's coastal region, the coastal Bend region. So that area from Port Aransas up to Port O'Connor was where the eye wall hit. And so one of the hardest hit areas was Port Aransas, Texas, where we spent a lot of time. And these are very rural regions of Texas. But then as the storm progressed over days, we saw it move towards southeast Texas. Houston, obviously, was a big newsmaker with the amount of rain that it dropped there, and the images of people in their boats rescuing their neighbors. And then it moved towards the Beaumont area. So the scope of Harvey's landfall, it was several days, which was why it was such a catastrophic storm.
Right. And about that first place the storm hit, Port Aransas, what did it look like after Hurricane Harvey?
Well, I was not there right after the storm hit. I have gotten images and stories from the people who lived there, who were either there when the storm made landfall or came a couple of days after. And a couple of people that I spoke with specifically very recently was the Port Aransas mayor, who has lived in Port Aransas for most of his life. His family has lived there for more than 130 years.
This is absolutely the worst storm I've ever seen. It to be honest with you, when I first saw the damage, I couldn't speak. It was terrible.
And I also spoke with the town city manager who rode out the storm that night when Harvey made landfall. And they both, you know, told me from their time living in those areas, they had never seen anything as destructive as Harvey. The mayor described it to me as a monster. And he will never, you know, he'll never look at the Gulf Coast the same way. Unfortunately, the storm destroyed and damaged 100% of businesses in Port Aransas and 85% of homes. So they've had a lot of work to do, and they still have a lot of work to do.
Wow. And now a year later, how is Port Aransas doing in terms of recovery? Are businesses back up and running, at least some businesses?
So a lot of their efforts after the storm, you know, obviously when a storm hits, you want to clear out the town and the debris, and then you got to get homes gutted, and you've got to figure out where you're going to place displaced people. But Port Aransas is also a beloved beach community in Texas. It's a large tourist destination, and tourism, you know, accounts for a large portion of their economy. So one of their main goals as well was to get those businesses and restaurants and the beaches and the harbors back in shape so that they could bring in tourism for this past summer season, the 2018 summer season. So a lot of their rebuilding efforts have gone into getting these business owners back on their feet, rebuilding these businesses so they can bring back people. And it's gone, you know, relatively well. I would say that like Port Aransas is back in business, but that's really just like a surface level statement, because when it comes to the city itself, you know, the city itself, the mayor said, suffered up to about $1 billion of damage. When we're talking about just city infrastructure, that's $50 to $70 million, he told me. And a lot of those infrastructures have not been fully repaired, like their police department, their fire department, their public library. Those are not yet functioning. They can't go in there yet. So basically, that portion of the recovery is kind of put aside, though, so they can focus on getting tourism back to Port Aransas.
And then you have, obviously, housing, and you also talked to some residents in the region, including Christy and Danny McElroy.
They're actually residents of an area called Aransas Pass, which is in between Port Aransas and Rockport. Again, an area that was hit very hard by the initial landfall of Harvey. Christy and Danny have both lived in that area for their entire lives. When the storm was approaching and they were given evacuation notices, they evacuated. They weren't really sure what to expect. I don't think anybody expected what Harvey actually did. But they came back after the storm. Their home was a total loss. They were insured, so insurance was able to pay for a good portion of their repairs. What insurance did not pay for, they were able to find in donations. A lot of the recovery efforts in Aransas Pass, Port Aransas, across Texas, a lot of it's just been, you know, people stepping up for other people, neighbors, helping neighbors, and donating money, providing goods and services. So the McElroys definitely were receivers of that. And they also, you know, they're going to stay, they're going to rebuild from the ground up. They're in the process of it, and they're almost done. They are hoping, what they told me specifically is that they want to move back in on August 25th, the year that Harvey made landfall.
But I can tell you, if it happens again and I lose my house, I won't stay. I'll move North Texas, where my brother-in-law and that is, or Central Texas.
We dealt with a Cat 4 storm and we took a direct shot at it. And a lot of people that even stayed said, you know, even the older people, my elders, even said they'll never stay for another one. And a lot of people have never come home.
Jill Amon is a producer and reporter for the Texas Standard, and we're talking about recovery in the coastal bin a year after Hurricane Harvey. Jill, another area you've been reporting on that was also really hard hit is Beaumont, a rural region. Can you remind listeners why the flooding occurred there and what the consequences were?
So there was a huge amount of rainfall that fell in the Beaumont area. I specifically was in the Rose City area. In the Vidor areas, which is just outside of Beaumont, I believe about 30 inches of rain had fell by the time it was all said and done. And there's a levee outside of Beaumont that's just above Rose City. And the river was breaching the levee. And the Army Corps of Engineers decided that it would be appropriate to go ahead and let the... To open the levee, so in the case that, because they thought that it was going to break. Well, unfortunately, Rose City, it's very, very small town, and a very low income part of the region, was at the bottom of this levee. So they received, you know, initially the rainfall wasn't what flooded Rose City. It was the waters that came after the levee was open. Wow. And that's what took a lot of people off guard. I mean, there were evacuations again issued, but the couple that I spoke with specifically, Patricia and Linton Cowart, who again have lived in Rose City for since 1961. So, you know, a very long time, hadn't experienced anything like this. They were definitely taken by surprise. They did not evacuate because, again, they did not expect it to be as bad. But their house did end up flooding. I think they got about a foot of water in there, and they had to be evacuated by boat.
I do get very apprehensive when it rains a lot. And we have had a couple of storms or rains that we got like 5 inches of rain. It definitely has done something to us mentally. I'm sure it has everybody that lives down here.
Wow. I mean, the bottom line with all of this is things still are not fully back to normal a year after the storm. And now we're in another hurricane season. Before we leave you, can you tell us if these communities are feeling better prepared than they were last year?
I think people have definitely learned a lesson. Like, just speaking with the Cowarts, they know that after what happened last year, if they are given an evacuation notice or if things are starting to look bad, they will leave. They will not stay. And I think that that's definitely something that a lot of people that I've talked to who didn't evacuate would agree on. I think that there's a lot of apprehension as to when the next big storm is going to come, so to speak, and how to prepare for that.
Sure.
You know, even if it rains or just some thunder, the Cowarts, the ones that I spoke to in Rose City, they still get very nervous. So I think that there are definitely like some emotional and mental scars that people are feeling. But at the end of the day, you know, these people are from Texas. They love their communities, and they want to stay there. So right. I don't think that a lot of people that I spoke to have any intentions of leaving.
Jill Ament is a producer and reporter for the Texas Standard, talking to us 1 year to the week of Hurricane Harvey's devastation. Jill, thank you for your reporting.
Thanks for having me.
This is Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, the Science Friday team has been reporting high-quality science and technology news, making science fun for curious people by covering everything from the outer reaches of space to the rapidly changing world of AI to the tiniest microbes in our bodies. Audiences trust our show because they know we're driven by a mission to inform and serve listeners first and foremost with important news they won't get anywhere else. And our sponsors benefit from that halo effect. For more information on becoming a sponsor, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.